Okay, people, it is part two of this week's Echo Chamber, and it's something slightly different. So we've got a film and a conversation, but it's not how we normally do things. But yeah, no, this film, well, it's a documentary, and it is very fascinating. Very fascinating. So people, I think we should get this episode started. Okay, so today we are looking at Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts. It is fascinating. It's streaming on Apple TV. And as I said, it's split into two parts. So first, we start with then. Okay, so there is this new documentary on Apple TV, right? It is called Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts, right? And, you know, as it says on the tin, it's a documentary about Steve Martin in two parts. It's directed by Morgan Neville. It is produced by Charlize Holmes, Morgan Neville, and Megan Walsh. It is executive produced by Katrin Rogers, right? Emily Osborne and Ben Kottner. It is co-produced by Katie Ladine and Chris Shellon, with post-production from Will Mavrinkulis and archival production from Jane Kelly Kozik. Daniel Wall handles the music of part one. Cinematography for part one. We have Brian Donnell, Brandon Smahada, Emily Topper, Graham Wilbury. Edited by Alan Lowe, Jeff Malmberg, and Aaron L. Nahr. Leslie Wolfe took care of the casting. And yeah, the people we hear from and sometimes see in part one. So we got Jerry Seinfeld. We have John McEwen. There is who else? Michael Ellis, Mitzi Trumbo, Mason Williams, Barry Edelstein, Harry Bliss, Stormy Shrek, I think Maple Bryan. Right, so the gist is this. Steve Martin is one of the most beloved and enigmatic figures in entertainment. Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces, dives into his extraordinary story from two distinct points of view, with companion documentaries that feature never before seen footage and raw insights into Martin's personal and professional trials and triumphs. So part one is Then, which chronicles Martin's early struggles and meteoric rise to revolutionize stand-up before walking away at 35. So, yeah, this is really interesting, right? Like, I think when you listen to so many comedy things and things on film, you hear stuff about Steve Martin, but I do not recall like a really frank conversation with Martin, you know, going into his life and stand up and all of those kind of things. So it wasn't until I started I realized that I was like, actually, I don't really know a lot from his mouth, as it were, you know? So it's interesting seeing that rise, because you see him at the pinnacle, right? You hear people talking about him at the pinnacle. But to get there, you always have to climb, right? You never start off at the pinnacle, right? So we see that early struggle, right? We find out as a kid, he just wanted to be famous. And then he wanted to be a magician, right? That was the first thing. He wanted to be a magician, right? Which you're just thinking, huh, okay, right? And then it's that realization that maybe he can't go as far as a magician as he could with comedy. So there's that transition. But you're hearing about all the things that played into some of the decisions that he makes, right? He gets a job at working at Disneyland. You know, all the friends that he makes and the things that he sees, right? How, like, him and his friend worked out patter when they're working in the magic shop there. Right. And it's the stuff that, you know, and this is one thing you hear from back in the day, that there's jokes that kind of get passed around. People kind of copy bits and pieces of other people. You know what I mean? That's how you did it. And you built a set. And then that was it. You perform that. You're not writing new material constantly. Right, which people do now, right? If a comedian just went out and did the same act over and over, people would be pissed. Now, obviously, right, you have the ones where people want to hear that famous, you know, routine, that famous sketch, you know, they'll be like, oh yeah, do the, you know, do the machine, do, yeah, just those things, right? But to do that complete, nah, people wouldn't be feeling that. But that, you know, in this time, that's what people wanted. And you see how he kind of viewed his act, viewed the success, viewed what he was doing, because we see like journal entries, and there's photos and these archival footage from back in the day. You know, so sometimes we see something, and then we have like Steve talking over it, or he's someone, one of his friends, someone that knows him. And so we get this like insight, right? That, yeah, you know, he performed in front of this crowd and it went really well, but, you know, he sees an empty seat and that bugged him, right? Or it was a transition where he decides just a headline, right? Like it's not working the way he's doing it. And we get these epiphanies that he comes across, which are just like, yo, how did it take that long? Right? There's a whole thing about crowds, which you just think, huh, I kind of feel you would just figure that out, but it took ages to figure it out. But do we just figure it out? Because you've heard it so many times from other comics, right? So this was, you know, so early. So comedy was so new, right? Technically, in the form in which we know it now. So like that big success, all of that, it was different. So this, it goes into all of that. There is a funny man. So a girl that he liked and he kind of hung with back in the day, Stormy Shrek, right? So he's talking about Stormy. And I think now she's an author, and, you know, she was very much into the church back then. I think they met at camp. And he was just like, oh yeah, I knew her before. She was so, you know what I mean, devoted to Christ. And you're just like, yo, Steve, That made me chuckle. That made me chuckle. But yeah, this was just fascinating. The insights that you get, right? The way you talked about, you know, TV and film, right? The different reactions you got when you said what kind of job you did and those kind of things, that relationship with the family. All of these things, like, are revealed to you. And it's really, really interesting. It's just over an hour and a half, right? Just over an hour and a half for part one. But yeah, if you like comedy, if you like Steve Martin, I highly recommend checking it out, people. I really do, man. So yeah, Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts. Part one, then. Okay, so now, people, we get into the now of this conversation, which looks at Steve's professional and personal life. So, yeah, now. So, right, Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts. Part two is now. And in this one, we hear from Jerry Seinfeld, Lorne Michaels, Adam Gopnik, John McCune, Melinda Dobbs, who's Steve's sister, Selena Gomez, Tina Fey, Martin Short, Diane Keaton, Eric Idle, Frank Oz, Michael Ells, Carl Gutileb. Who else shows up? Eric Fischel. Who? Eric Fischel, I thought, really looks like, oh God, homie from Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, the guy that helped create Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's who I think Eric looks like. Anyway, Harry Bliss is in part two, and his wife, Anne Springfield. Right, the gist, basically, what part two is, right? So now focuses on the present day, with Martin in the golden years of his career, retracing the transformation that led to happiness in his art and personal life. So yeah, it's so different to part one then, you know, but it works so well as an accompaniment, right? Because we get this really interesting retrospective, you know, with Steve just looking back on things and talking about, you know, the career as a, you know, him looking at it right now. You know, in part one, there's these reflections and stuff, but that's kind of, you know, in hindsight, the few things are kind of like in hindsight. Yes, I realize now at this point, but we're having this very honest, I mean, as honest as you can get with these kind of things, right? This very honest look. And we see these interesting relationships. I mean, it's always fascinating seeing him with Martin Short, right? They have such a great connection and chemistry. So there's that. But Anne, the way Anne, like, talks about him, talks about their daughter, there's just something magical there, right? There's, you know, you have people and they say things and they, you know, exhume all this, you know, supposed happy, but you can see it's a front, it's an act. But when she's talking, like how they met, like just that, I don't know, there's this quietness about it, but there's this just, it rings of honesty and love, right? And I think that it is such a nice thing to see, right? Because we've got all of this talk about, you know, this big stand-up and then this big film star, this big musician to this author, this playwright, you know what I mean? Just all of these different things. But then you get this more personal reflection and this different look at who Steve Martin is. And it's really nice. It was just really, I think it worked so well. I like the fact he doesn't show his daughter, right? You just see a stick person. Because, yeah, you know, you don't need that. Like, we don't need to see his daughter to understand who Steve Martin is, you know? But it's just this interesting, and we see these bits, right? There's an interview where he's talking about his art and how he wants to keep that private. And then later on, he's showing the art, right? So we can see this journey, right? He's talking about the journey that he's been on. And those transitions in life and the evolution and the way different things have affected him and all of that. But you can see it just within those two, you know, conversations, right? How he was closed off. He was very possessive of the things that he found pleasure in. And now he's a happier person and he's just like, yeah, he can share this side of him with the world. So all of that was, it was fascinating. Now, what was so frustrating? Now, I was watching like a press copy. So maybe in the copy that's in the version that screens, it might be different, but the subtitles, Jesus Christ, the subtitles are fucking tiny. These tiny white subtitles at the bottom of the screen that aren't there for that long. There's no background, so you're losing them in a light background. You know what I mean? Just what's happening on the screen is just ridiculous. There's other bits where Morgan is asking Steve questions. And again, you know, you've got the subtitles, but they're very quick because it's a question. And they are, and it's just like the question comes out really muffled, like, Steve. And you're just like, what the fuck was that? Like, surely you can just go in and make the question louder. Why don't you just do that? Why are you doing this? It's such a terrible, you know, aesthetic choice. It is so weird. So weird. Like, I enjoyed this, you know, both of these documentaries. That was the most frustrating part of it all. I mean, just the fucking subtitles, right? And the garbled fucking question. Just, I wish they had sorted that out. Everything else is really interesting. It's great. I enjoyed this. You know, it's you know, I think it works to get this look, this understanding on Steve Martin, his career, right? It is interesting the thing that he quits comedy at how old was he when he quit? I think he quit comedy at 35. Which is just like, huh, right? But, you know, he wanted that adoration. So he's thinking, oh, I'll be a film star, right? So he moves to film. But then he kind of comes back to comedy now with Martin Short, which is in, and just the way they're putting the show together is kind of weird. Right, kind of weird when you think about doing stand-up, right? Doing stand-up, you go to a club and you practice, you write your jokes, right? That's the thing, man. You can write jokes and you can think, that's pretty funny. And then you go and you say it on that stage and people don't always laugh. Or people laugh at a point where you just think, oh, but that's not the funny bit, right? The funny bit is, you know, so you get, sometimes you get laughs at the weird points, right? But you're practicing, you're seeing what works. And, you know, just because something doesn't work in one room doesn't mean it's rubbish, right? It can work in another room. So that's the odd thing about all of this. But what they're doing is writing jokes down and then talking between themselves, thinking, oh, that will work, that won't work, let's keep that, blah, blah, blah. And then doing it. So there's no practice. It's just like, all right, let's go and see what happens. Which is just, yeah, kind of seems crazy to me. But it's interesting watching, you know, that process, you know, for the small part that we see, right? Him talking about his childhood and that kind of understanding about, you know, I guess, fatherhood and all of those kind of things, you know? Yeah. It's, as I said, it's really different to part one, but still a fascinating piece. So I highly recommend checking out Steve Martin, a documentary in two parts. You know, both parts are about an hour and a half, just slightly over an hour and a half. So, you know, there's a bit to watch, but, you know, it reveals a lot. You know, so I think if you like documentaries, if you like comedy, right? So if Steve Martin is your favorite actor, if you like the banjo, I mean, who likes the banjo? But if you like all of these things, I think you will enjoy this documentary, which is screening on Apple TV Plus. Enjoy. Okay, so as mentioned, we had a conversation, right? But here's the thing. I didn't do it, right? Normally, I'm the one asking the questions, really delving deep. But although it would have been fascinating talking to Steve and Morgan, unfortunately, it wasn't to be. So the studio has a generic pre-recorded interview. And I wasn't going to use it, but I thought, you know what? It could be something that you want to listen to. So who am I to hold this back? So here is a conversation between Steve Martin and Morgan Nemeth.
We found each other through the normal means, really. I was aware of Morgan's work, and I loved it. Not only Will You Be My Neighbor, but many other ones. But also, he did a documentary on an art movement in California in the 60s that I was around for, called The Cool School. And it featured a friend of mine, Irving Blum. He's over 90 now. But he gave Andy Warhol a very first show in Los Angeles, his very first show, as a matter of fact. And so I had an appreciation, and then I guess you contacted me somehow.
Yeah, I got word that Steve was maybe willing to do a documentary, and I immediately came to New York and wanted to sit down with you.
People ask me, so why did you do a documentary? I said, well, if not now, when?
You know? It was right coming out of COVID, too. Like, I don't know, mm-hmm. Everybody was like sitting at home wondering about things. I didn't know if that changed your thinking at all.
Well, I had begun cleaning out my memorabilia. You know, I had sold some things at auction to benefit the motion picture home. You know, I had clothes from movies and things like that. And it's things, frankly, I just didn't want to leave for my wife to deal with at some point. You know, so I thought I'll do the escorting out of some of this stuff. So this is also a way to summarize a life that I, in a way that I couldn't. It would take someone else to do it. Well, you know, archival material is everywhere. When I wrote a memoir, an autobiographical memoir, and so much information came from people I contacted, and they remembered things. I went, oh yeah. So not only is archival material in your house, it's also in the minds of other people.
I'll say, as a documentarian, Steve saved so much great stuff. So the fact that he had his spiral notebooks from when he was 16 years old, you know, things like that with his homework assignments sometimes, you know, your philosophy notebooks from UCLA, things like that, yeah. You know, it was a trove of Steve's whole
life. I noticed there's some misspellings in the movie. Yeah. Weird, I spelled W-I-E-R-D.
I did notice that. Yeah.
But, you know, you get a pass, except I was in college.
The thing I remember about meeting Steve for the first time was you invited me over for lunch at your house, and you wrote to me and said, would salad be all right? And I said, yeah, salad would be great. Then you wrote to me again and said, would you mind salmon on the salad? And I thought that would be great. And I thought, surely Steve has somebody else to write to me to ask me about lunch. But that actually was very indicative of who Steve is, which is...
I find it's harder to delegate than just do it yourself. So, yeah. You know.
So the first meeting, we ended up talking about art and all kinds of other things, not even that much about the film. And I remember at the end of that meeting, you kind of saying, well, let's do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been a fan of Steve since I was a kid and started memorizing his albums. But I would say the deeper reason is that Steve has had the kind of career that touches so many different things I like. So I love the comedy, I love the film, I love the stand-up, but I love art and theater and novels. And that fact that your life goes in these very different directions is something that was really resonant with me.
There are always challenges to anything you do. You know, the challenge for me is, you know, documentary shows a lot of things about your life, and there's nothing I'm not proud of, but there's things I wish were better, you know, just in terms of quality and material. And so you do have to revisit your failures as well as your successes, just, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a moment in the second film when we're listening to cassettes of your old stand-up.
Yeah.
And you're so visibly uncomfortable doing that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm sure there were many moments that made you squirm by kind of having
to... Yes, there is, because, you know, when you're doing a documentary, you want everything to be so good. Everybody go, wow, that was really good. And then you're listening to something you know is in process, you know, or not good or not finished. And, you know, if I look back over my stand-up career, which is the first half, you know, I could probably count, you know, 25 shows that I would go, yeah, that was really good, you know, out of 1,000. You know, but I'm not being self-critical. I'm just saying it's just the way it is.
It's part of the process. I think we actually learn more by our failures than our successes. And we spend a lot of time on things that are deemed failures, but I actually then respond to how Steve dealt with those things, which is working through them. His persistence, you know, is incredible. And to me, something totally relatable.
Hard to answer. I mean, I want them, I guess, to like the documentary or like the work that's presented in the documentary. But the documentary is not obligated and doesn't only show positive things. It shows things that are stepping stones, you know, to something else that you're on your way to. So by definition, they're not as good as what you want ultimately, although there might be some things in there that are what I wanted ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I got an email from a young filmmaker who watched the documentaries yesterday and said, so much of this story was relatable to me, my creative journey. You know, I think in that way, the surprising thing is, as much as it's about Steve, who's had this incredible career, there's a relatability to it that I think there are many lessons to be learned, you know, from your journey. So that part was really surprising.
I mean, I've always liked the character of Roxanne because of C.D. Bales, actually, because I was so busy, I was so focused on writing the script, and now it's like 2 days before shooting, and I realized I had never thought about how I was going to play it. And I think I just decided on upbeat. And sometimes that's all it takes to inform your character or your performance of it. So, you know, it's fun to play an upbeat character who wins.
You know, there's so many great characters you've had throughout your career. You know, I think maybe Bowfinger.
Yeah, I like I that. But I had a great cast surrounding me. You know, Eddie Murphy, and Christine Baranski, and so many people. Heather Graham. Yeah.
You weren't so bad, though.
Oh, well. the joy of that movie was in the writing and working out the plot and making the plot tick like a clock, and working with Frank Oz, the director.
Yeah.
So there we go with part two of this week's Echo Chamber. As said, like, this documentary, definitely worth checking out. It streams on Apple TV Plus. You know what I mean? There's a load of great stuff there. So I definitely feel a subscription is worthwhile. But yeah, if you've got the opportunity, check this out, because I think there's stuff here that we just didn't know about old Stevie Boy. So yeah, definitely worth a chat. I hope, even though it wasn't me doing it, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Now remember, this is part two of this week's episode. So go check out part one. We looked at Barbie, we looked at Wish, The Wages of Fear, Baghead, and I forget what the other one was, but we got 5 films, people. So go check those out. Go follow the YouTube. You know what I mean? All those likes, all that is helpful, man. We can get to that next level. You know what I mean? So share with your friends, share with your people, and I will see you next week for, I think we've got a 2-parter for you next week. We're just keeping these conversations going. And if you're a filmmaker, you want to chat, hit me up. Okay. All right, people, enjoy the film watching. Peace.